Hello, everybody, and welcome to the first ever episode of the Wiz Wit Hockey Podcast. I am your host, Drew. I am not cool, no matter how much I like to tell you. With me, as always, are my co-hosts. We've got Devin.
Hi.
And we've got Kush, also known as Ryan.
So,
what we are here is we are three idiots who have strong opinions on hockey and the Flyers in particular. We're going to be a Flyers podcast, hockey podcast, and a little bit of random bullshit from time to time. Anything else you guys like to add about that?
I would like to add that I actually hate
the Flyers. Pretty sure we all hate the Flyers at this point. I think that's the whole reason why this podcast is happening.
I think I liked them when I was like seven.
I liked them that one time they beat the Penguins in the playoffs when it, like, Primo was a god in six overtimes.
I think my first Flyers memory is them blowing a 3-1 playoff series against the Devils. So that pretty much sums up my whole Flyers fandom.
That pretty much sums up our generation's version of the Flyers.
I just really like the color.
So you're just naturally drawn to the Flyers because of that. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
What about when the Ducks had their orange jerseys? Do you remember them?
No, they're terrible. You mean like the
maybe we should start with that. Other teams should not be allowed to wear orange. Islanders, Edmonton, and Ducks. Stop it. Stop
Absolutely.
It.
That's true. Can we get a petition going?
We had it first.
Do we like go after the Adidas or we go after both, right?
Yeah, with our powerful warriors.
Yes.
Well, I'm assuming
with hockey litigation group.
we're going to come at them with a full force of $5 worth of legal team. So in episode one, we are going to talk about how 98 points can feel so disappointing. So we're going to talk about the Flyers last season. We're going to start with last offseason, go all the way through the playoffs, hit some points, go over some notes, express our very, very strong opinions and everything like that. So let's start with last offseason. Flyers finished last year at missing the playoffs. I think they had 88 points. Key losses, we're going to talk about one in a second, but Steve Mason, Nick Schultz, Michael Delzato, Chris Vandevelde, and Pierre-Édouard Bellemare. Of course, Bellemare going out in the expansion. Vandevelde, I don't even think he is playing in the NHL anymore. Delzato went to Vancouver. Nick Schultz retired. Mason went to Winnipeg, and who knows, has a chance at a cup this year the way they're playing. But the big one, Braden Schenn. Braden Schenn traded to the Blues for Yuri Laterra. And two first-round picks. First-round pick, of course, would end up being Morgan Frost. And this year's ends up being the 14th overall pick. We're going to see how that pans out. Thoughts on the Schenn trade?
So, obviously, it worked.
we made the playoffs, so we did something, right?
Yeah, I think Hexel appeared in some type of crystal ball, saw the Blues were going to just miss. That 14th overall pick's going to really come in handy, but do you think we've seen a lot of stuff, like they're going to bundle it and then trade up?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess we're going to have to wait and see what happens, like, when this is all said and done, what happens with that second pick. But from, like, a long-term perspective, the Schenn trade's great, but I do think the Flyers really missed him this year.
Yeah, I mean, last year he put up 25 goals, 30 assists, 55 points, but he was a minus 13, which is a big deal. He did play in 79 games. He only missed three games last year. This year, I think he was pretty similar numbers, right? I actually
think he did better, didn't he?
He started
off.
No,
he was.
I don't know how well he finished.
He was like on the top line.
I know he kind of. Yeah.
Take a look here.
But no, he definitely he was either the first or he's the first or second in points.
Yeah, here it is, Braden Schenn. He finished with 70 points, so much better than I thought. He had 28 goals, 42 assists, and he was a plus 10, so he did really well for them.
Yeah, he was at the end of the season. He was their top line center. I guess someone was hurt, but
well, they really don't have any centers anymore. Now that they traded Stastny away.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they don't.
Yeah, because Tarasenko's a winger, isn't he?
So yeah, basically he's St. Louis's top center. So
yeah, he's their top scorer this year. You're
and
right.
The Flyers are really missing a third line center this year,
which Which, unfortunately, that's what they thought they were going to get out of Jury Laterra. Jury Laterra in St. Louis was a third-line center. He was a good third-line center. It goes to show how much a system means to a role player and not a superstar. And, again, look at what happened with Shen. He goes to a place where he is the guy, and he flourishes. So good for him.
I think Shen was always just kind of underappreciated when he was here. But
I think that goes for the majority of Philadelphia athletes, Flyers.
That's true.
Eagles, Sixers, Phillies alike. There are a lot of guys who are very underappreciated because Philadelphia has this culture. Well, we need to win. We need to win right now. I don't know if the fans have noticed, but we don't do that very often. Other than the Super Bowl 52 champions, Philadelphia Eagles, which we're going to talk about forever now. And then what, 2008 with the Phillies, and then 83? Something like that? Who cares? Yeah, exactly. It's sad because, you know, the Flyers, they go and they lose to the Blackhawks in six. And Patrick Kane, you will always be hated in Philadelphia. And we're not going to talk about that anymore. Other key acquisitions, Brian Elliott, starting goaltender. He's had him for 2 years at $2.75 million a year. We got Nolan Patrick with the second overall draft pick. What a blessing we got out of that draft. And then, of course, Morgan Frost, which we already spoke about. But Nick Patrick, how lucky were we to get the second overall pick?
The justice for losing Patrick Kane.
True. We should have had Patrick Kane, and then we would have won in six against Chicago.
Exactly. He would never have been there to score the goal.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah. And then we extended Ghost. The only big extension was 6 years, $4.5 million. So overall, offseason, I liked it, especially at the time. Now, of course, I don't really like Laterra as much. But again, like you said, Devin, it's all about the picks for that. So we're gonna move into the regular season, and we lost our first game, didn't we? Or did we go 1-0? I don't remember. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That's right.
Years. Yeah. We won the first game. It was kind of cool. And then we had like a 4-game West Coast road trip, and it was weird. We came home. We blew out the Capitals on home ice 8-2. What a game.
Drew, you're forgetting.
What am I forgetting?
You're forgetting a very important game in Nashville. Where Dale Weiss.
I know where we're going.
Took two penalties in one play, the dumbest play I've ever seen in my entire life, and then the Flyers challenged an offsides goal and basically just blew a lead and lost the game in like the final two.
You see, the thing is, I didn't forget it. I just blocked that from my memory.
I was hoping that, like, the part of me was hoping they'd miss the playoffs by one point.
Just so you can
that one
out.
Point. Yeah.
It almost happened.
Absolutely.
And it did almost happen. We'll get to that, too. But, I mean,
if they win that game, though.
See.
They're ahead of the Penguins.
There are a ton of instances where it's, if we would have won that game, if we would have held on and held that lead, because what ends up happening is we go in October 6-5-1, have 13 points, we're fifth in the Metro. Not the greatest thing. But then November happens. In November and December, we had some issues. We had a lot of issues. We would finish November eventually with 23 points, only 10 points in November. We were last in the Metro. And in November started the infamous 10-game losing streak. Because what would happen was be Philadelphia the year before, we win 10 games in a row, be the first team to ever do that and miss the playoffs. Then this year, we became the first team to win 10 games in a row and then lose 10 games in a row the previous season or the following season and make the playoffs, which is very interesting. But that 10-game win streak, we went 0-5-5. So we did get 5 points out of it. However, the key to that was we blew leads all the time. And that, gentlemen, is why we finished where we did. Because just like that Nashville game, we did it over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
I think part of those blown leads was it was clearly the player usage at the end of the games, where you'd see like your quote unquote role players come in, and I don't know why at that point why aren't you playing your good players, you know, like your top left winger, your scorers, your clearly those guys are good at hockey. They should be out there defending the lead with 2 minutes left.
That's a good point. It's a valid point, and it makes a lot of sense. But NHL coaches don't think about that, especially ours, who just wants to put out big guys who've played for at least 4 years, and that just means they're good at defense. Like, that's all it takes. It just, when were you drafted 4 years ago? All right, you're going out there. Pretty much how I guess the decision making goes.
I mean, we're gonna touch on him later on, but I think there's a lot to that, because years and years ago, even into the mid to late 2000s, you know, you had your top line, your second line, and your third line was always a checking line. And I think that some people in our organization, whether it be the coach or the GM, and again, we'll talk about them later, still have a little bit of that mentality. And now, of course, Hextall is building towards an overall general scoring lineup, four lines of scoring players, maybe a little bit more defensive on the fourth line. But I think Hextall, coming from the college game, still had that checking line, and I still think he's kind of working through that. And that's why you see that early, especially early on in the season, but more or less his lack of aggression, which leads into that too. He's just kind of playing it safe, where late in the third, if you got a 1-2 goal lead, his system is dump and change. Get fresh guys out there, sit back, take your foot off the gas pedal. And I think in college that probably works, because there's not a lot of parity, because the skill level is so much higher in the NHL, it's just not going to work. And as it shows, we just blow leads consistently throughout the year and have to settle for 1 point instead of getting two. And we have these three-point games in the division that adds up, especially late in the season.
Right.
And that's...
But that thing with that 10-game losing streak was kind of, like, misleading. I mean, they lost 5 in overtime. They lost a lot of games. Like, they could have easily went, like, 3-5 and... That's not 10, right? But, you know,
they very easily could have won 7 games out of that 10.
Yeah, so I mean, it wasn't surprising that they came out of that and then they came right out of it and had a 6-game winning streak, right? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
So
mm-hmm.
And then they kind of just did that for the rest of the year, where they would win 5 games, lose 5, win 15 out of 20, and then. That you saw in March, they just took a dive. They were very streaky.
Yeah.
I think they were, as far as consistency goes, they were the most inconsistent team in the NHL.
They were consistently inconsistent.
And, yeah.
We're going to talk about this later, obviously, but I think that showed very much so in the playoffs. Because between each game was a different game, it seemed like. And, you know, the story is told throughout the season, and we see it when it matters most. But anything else about the 10-game losing streak for you guys? I think I'm good, pretty good on that. I mean, disappointed.
Yeah, I mean,
for sure.
It happened.
I felt like crap going through that.
I mean, at that part in the season, even though we technically weren't losing games that like, we were losing games that maybe we shouldn't have lost, I still felt like, I don't know. You get that feeling of dread on the season, and then they come back, and like I said, it's an inconsistency.
Yeah.
I guess we'll touch on that later with the state of the fan base, but I think that helps drive that.
And I think a big part of what was so frustrating about the 10-game loss is not that we were losing close games, it's the fact that we were losing close games, we were blowing leads, and Hextall goes, hey, I mean, we got 5 points, so we're cool. And I think that's not the attitude you want out of the voice of the team to the media. You want him to say, "Now we should do better. We should come out of that with 10 points instead of 5 points. We should come out of that, you know, 7-3 instead of 5-5."
Do you want to talk just about the season, at the regular season as a whole, before we move like into the playoffs?
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm going right through it. Listen, I got the research done. You guys are just here to be pretty faces. All right.
I mean,
faces for the radio,
faces for the internet. Okay. And of course, Devin, as you mentioned, after that, we go on a 6-game win streak. So we finished December at a total record of 16-14-8 at 40 points, still last in the Metro. Metro at this point was very close, and it was still really close at the end of the season, but even more so then. So we go on the January and New Year, new Flyers, right? Here comes that streakiness that we're talking about. 8-4 in January, finished with 56 points, fifth in the Metro, so we're slowly coming up. But then February happens. And what happened in February was very important because a man named Travis Konecny got moved to the top line. And we exploded 10-1-2 in February. 78 points, finished second in the Metro, but for a brief period of time. February 22nd, we were first in the Metropolitan.
I remember and that. All, it was very exciting.
About 20 seconds.
For all of the day. and it was, but it was very exciting. It gave you hope. Okay, we've turned this corner. We found the niche. We got Konecny on the top line. Hackstall's finally like respecting his talent, not punishing from stupid shit. And then March happened. And he started punishing him for stupid shit. Once Raffle came back from injury, he was like, oh, okay, we got to prepare for playoffs here. So he puts Raffle back on the top line, and it kind of works, but not really, because Konecny's not getting the production that he's getting. And it's just, it's more of that inconsistency that we're seeing, not just from the team as a whole, but from your coaching staff, from your GM sending these guys in certain directions. So we finished February, 34-19-10. Great record. Start March, and we go on a 5-game losing streak, 0-4-1. So again, inconsistency. And
I think after that, after we had that February, I don't think anybody realistically saw this team at this point in time as a first in the division team. It's just
no, especially not when you're in a division with Washington and Pittsburgh, and look at how well they just play every year in the regular season, let alone the postseason. You're not really expected to finish first or come in first, especially when you don't have a true number one goaltender. Because remember, we were dealing with a ton of injuries. Because a big thing that happened right at the deadline is we would go out and get Peter Mrazek, and we'd trade a fifth round pick for him, which was needed at the time. It was very needed because Elliott was hurt and Weyrich was hurt. You had Lyon, who was untested, but you don't really have anybody else with him. You don't have a million goalies to tap into like Vegas did at the beginning of their year.
That was incredible. I wish we had that.
Vegas didn't have a million goalies. They just had a million goalies step up.
Right.
But yeah.
We still don't have that.
It wasn't like they had 10 goalies who everyone was like wishing they had.
I'd rather take Oscar Donsk and then Mrazek at this point, because Mrazek would come in and just lay eggs.
I mean, I'd rather take like a garbage can than Mrazek at this point and put it in front.
The thing with Mrazek is he did steal at one point a couple of years ago the starting job away from Jimmy Howard.
No, he did.
And Detroit, the fan base, everybody there in Detroit were like, this is our guy. He's going to lead us back to the promised land. And then he became a dumpster fire. And Detroit saw an opportunity to unload him to us, and we were like, we need to go. And they're like, take him. We'll take anything. Seventh round, fifth round, cool. Let's take him. Let's go.
When he got traded, I always, like, when they traded him, I heard that, you hear stuff from the Red Wings fan base that he really did fall off. And I always thought that was kind of weird to kind of pin on your goalie, because they're just a terrible team. And you didn't think, you're not watching every Red Wings game. You're not consistently following Mrazek. As far as you know, it could just be the Red Wings are terrible. But you get him, you see how he plays the position. He was just out of position a lot.
Yeah.
He's erratic.
Yeah, erratic exactly, is very good. Now, for you listeners, I am a goalie. I'm not a good goalie. I'm not even going to claim. 0.9 seconds. Okay, for the record, I gave up a goal 0.9 seconds left, and it just – we still won. It wasn't even a big deal.
It was what, from the opposing blue line? It's not important.
Semantics. Anyways. Even though I'm not good, I still kind of understand how you're supposed to play the fucking position. And when you watch Mrazek in the crease, it's like he's like weirdly tracking the puck, and his body position's weird. And he does these weird little spins every now and then. I don't understand why the fuck he does that to try to find the puck. But yeah, I don't know. He's interesting. But we needed him. It made sense. The trade made sense. Going to the end of March, we kind of were even through the rest of March, which made things interesting because, we're sitting now at the end of March, fourth in the Metro. Went from second to fourth just like that. And you're on that bridge. You're on that edge. And as Florida was pushing hard, they had a good end of the season. We really didn't until the last four games. We went 3-1 in April to finish. And we finished with 98 points, third in the Metro. And that was probably the worst thing we could have done. Because all we needed to do was get 1 point. We get 1 point. We don't play Pittsburgh in the playoffs. We get two, and we play Pittsburgh in the playoffs. So I'd rather have faced Washington or Tampa than Pittsburgh, because I hate losing to Pittsburgh.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But the big thing coming into this, I think the past 2 years, is it's a transitional year, says Hextall. And it kind of felt like our goal was to make the playoffs and then go golfing. Because when we get to the playoffs, what happens is you get blown out in game one, 7-0.
Yeah, well, to go back to before we like jump into the playoffs, I'm pretty sure Hextall is trying to, you know, serve two masters at the same time. Like, he wants to rebuild. He's like looking at the future. He has a 5-year plan. We're in year three of it, right? But he, for whatever reason, he doesn't think we can stomach a full-on rebuild. So he's trying to make us, you know, a playoff team at the same time. And basically what you end up getting is exactly what the Flyers are, which is a team that can't compete in the playoffs but can make the playoffs.
Yeah.
And that's basically what happened. So.
And I mean, it's not to knock the Flyers. 98 points, that's nothing to shake a fist at. That's impressive in today's NHL. But
yeah, it's not
at the same time. What,
they had 15 overtime losses or something like that, didn't they?
They finished 42, 26, and 14.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, those 14 losses are inflating our numbers.
Yeah.
I mean, look how many wins the Penguins had compared to our wins. And we were 2 points behind.
Yeah.
So it's not like a real 98-point season. It's a 500 season. So they were mediocre, and then they played, you know, the best team in our generation probably.
Yeah,
and got wrecked. So
as this goes on, I can kind of see them improving though.
The Flyers,
every year they get a. They improve throughout the rebuild.
I think the problem is our forwards and defensemen are where we need to be. The issue is our goalie's still 2-3 years away from making it to the pro club. Right, Carter Hart, for the reference. He is and going to be six. Or should be the guy. He should be the man. He should be the next Carey Price, Marc-Andre Fleury, the young goalie, the god, the savior of the franchise, right? But where our team is in front of a goaltending position is where we need it to be when he's just coming up. And I think we're missing out on the best years of Drew's career, the best years of Voracek and Simmons, and we have lost Kush. He's died.
Don't worry. I can carry this. Well, we don't need Drew and Voracek to be our best players by the time Carter Hart comes up.
Right.
Like, that's everyone's team. That's everyone keeps mentioning that. That's like everyone's biggest fear. It's like, oh, by the time all the young guys are good, Drew and Voracek won't be good. That's fine. If Nolan Patrick, like if Sean Couturier is your veteran number one center, turning 28 and he's still a Selke guy, and then Nolan Patrick is your second line scoring two way center, and then you have Travis Konecny, you have Frost, you have all these young guys who are good, and then you also have a veteran mid-30s Drew and Voracek, that's fine. Like, they don't need to be putting up 80 points at that point.
Yeah.
They could be putting up 40 points.
No, you're right. Or 60 points. But who's gonna, of the kids, of the guys that are coming up, the Patricks, Konecny, Frost, who's gonna replace the consistent production of Drew and Voracek? Now, of course, I say consistent.
Nolan Patrick and Travis Konecny.
Do you really think they're both the player to put up between 70?
Nolan Patrick's a second overall pick. Drew was picked 26th,
Henrik Lundqvist was picked in the fifth round, and he's still one of the greatest goaltenders of all time.
Right. I would expect Nolan Patrick to be a top two center.
I would expect him to be, but can he stay healthy to be? And of course, I'm being a pessimistic Flyers fan.
I'm not gonna anybody can get hurt.
Right.
So I'm not. True. I mean, but
true. And I mean,
he could be fine.
We're gonna touch on players' individual performances in a little bit, but. Nolan Patrick, as he became healthier throughout the year, because he was dealing with injuries coming into the year, he did come into his own. He's certainly shown that once he's healthy, he can play at the NHL speed. And, you know, there's a learning curve as a rookie. Not everybody's going to be Connor McDavid coming into the league.
Well, no one.
Right, you're right. No, Connor McDavid is the Sidney Crosby of his generation. He is the guy. So you're right. You know, nobody's going to be Connor McDavid. But, you know, nobody... I don't think anybody expected Nolan Patrick to come out here this year and win the Rookie of the Year.
No, especially coming off of a surgery.
Right, exactly. But I think, like I said, I think our team forward-wise, Kush, if you want to touch on this, is where I think the ideal position for them to be for Carter Hart to come in. But as Devin said, because we know you had some issues, Devin brought it up that having an aging Drew and Voracek, you're not having them be your one and two guys. By the time Carter Hart's ready, you're having them be your veteran leadership sitting on the second and third line. So what's your take on that?
Well, I think that maybe, like, Voracek, I mean, as he gets older, I don't know if he sticks around, but I think Giroux will always be a part of your veteran leadership, at least for the next 4 years.
He doesn't necessarily be
– yeah, he doesn't necessarily have to be your top scorer
right.
for when Carter Hart's ready in 3 or 4 years, when he's, I guess, a completely molded product.
Yeah.
Because I potential may to see some NHL action next year. If not, definitely.
No, I think you want him to play a full season in the AHL unless he is literally just dominating every
single game really
in the AHL.
That's okay, just as long as you replace them with good draft picks and then you have agency. And start making good moves in free agency.
You okay? You're breaking up over there, bud. Oh no. I think he's gone again. I think we're having issues.
No.
Well, I'll just like kind of piggyback. Is he back? Well, what he said, like, you know, Carter Hart's not going to step in next year and be Carey Price. Yeah. Like, it, realistically, he's going to spend at least half a year in the Phantoms, probably the full year, and then he's going to come back in year two and be the backup to somebody. And then it's going to take 2 or 3 years of being an NHL goalie before he starts being like a Vezina candidate.
The thing about coming back in year two is year two means the waiver with Elliott's gone. So I think the plan is he's going to come into the organization next year. He's going to play in the AHL. And unless he's dominant and the Flyers need a goalie due to injury, he's not going to see the NHL other than the preseason. And I think that's right. That's the right play. That is the perfectly safe play because you don't want to rush a kid. And Hextall, being a goalie in his own right, being one of probably the second greatest goalie in Flyers history, knows this. And I think he's going to take his time with the precious gem that is Carter Hart. So I'd expect him to see him starting, not next season, but the year after, unless he has a major setback. I really think that once Elliott and Waverth are gone, Stolarz is going to be the backup and Carter Hart's going to be the starting goalie, and maybe Lyon instead of Stolarz. I think they're interchangeable.
I think those two are interchangeable by far. I think you're right. I think Hart is going to. I mean, I think he sees NHL action next year because Brian Elliott and Michael Neuwirth. I mean, unless this new trainer that Neuwirth's getting is going to miraculously cure him from stepping on the ice and
literally exploding all of his internal everything.
Have you guys seen the Jumanji remake?
No, I have not.
Oh,
no, I haven't.
There's a scene in there where Kevin Hart explodes, and it's hilarious. But, that's what I think.
Yeah. I mean, we're definitely going to
pretty
see
much Michael Neuber.
How we move forward from the season. I think it was a good learning season. I think it really showed the potential of certain players, and again, we're going to talk about the players after the playoffs, because playoffs we're gonna touch on for a good amount, but there's unfortunately not a lot to talk about, as we did lose in 6 games in the first round to Pittsburgh, which is very sad and frustrating.
Well, I mean, you see in the playoffs that how much depth that Pittsburgh actually has and requires. They just don't have that depth. I think
you really notice that when Malkin gets hurt.
Yeah, I was going to say,
and it doesn't affect them all that much. Who were they missing game one against the Capitals? Malkin and Hagelin, and they still won. Like, and they came back in that game to win, if I remember correctly.
They won tonight.
They won tonight as well. Yes, they've even the series with Washington, and I think as much as I hate to say this, Pittsburgh is the best team of our generation, and it sucks as a Flyers fan. And I kind of want to just go sit in a corner and cry and weep every night when I think about that.
Well, they have,
you're right.
Phil Kessel in their third line, like, what
exactly.
Kind of, like,
when you go from Crosby,
we have on our third line, Yuri Lehtera, like, disgraceful.
When you go from Crosby to Malkin
Oh, wait, I'm Kessel. Sorry. Thibodeau was our first line center.
Oh, my God. We're not going to – well, that's only
– for a little bit, yeah.
We're coming into the playoffs now. I think we're good with the regular season. I liked what we touched on. I think we did a very good job with that. But I think what's crazy about the postseason is who shined and who didn't. Now, of course, game one, we come out there and nobody played well, losing 7-0. It's like we didn't show up. We forgot we were playing the playoffs. We thought it was preseason. Whatever. But game two, different story. We talked about inconsistency. We went 5-1. All of a sudden, it's an even series. Everybody's coming back into it. You know what? Hang on. I just had a thought. I just had a remembrance of leading into the playoffs. Yeah, we made the playoffs. And then we see that we're playing Pittsburgh. And I'm kind of thinking to myself, I think we're going to get swept by Pittsburgh. And as every day came closer, it goes, you know, we could beat the Penguins in 7. We could totally do that. Yeah, we're beating them in 6. We're beating them in 5. Dave, we're sweeping these motherfucking Penguins. We got this. Game 1 happens. We're getting fucking swept. And then, of course, we go in game 2, and we win it in a semi fashion, 5-1. And it's kind of like, hey, we can beat the fucking Penguins. We can do this. And then game 3 and 4 happened. And we lost 5-1, and then get shut out again, 5-0. And it's not like – I mean, we are definitely outclassed by Pittsburgh. But I think a big part of that was the guy in between the playoffs, Matt Murray, because he just shut down every single thing we tried to do.
Yeah, whenever the Flyers got a good opportunity, Matt Murray was there to close the door. Part of it was he was playing very well. Part of it was a couple that
I think a big part of that too is the Flyers aren't there yet. They aren't ready. They aren't in that big position where they can capitalize on those opportunities and then defend their own, because that's what happened. We would have, you know, some good pressure. Matt Murray would make a big save. We'd be in there, and then all of a sudden, Pittsburgh is like, hey, we got three lines of great people, and then they would just bulldoze and score 4 goals, and it was over.
I don't know if you saw, I think it was game 1 of Washington-Pittsburgh, where the Capitals were up 2-0 in the third. They had been, like, controlling most of the game, and the Penguins scored 3 goals in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Right? And that's the Capitals. The Capitals are the best team.
They scored, yeah.
So the Flyers never had a chance. Like, you look at the Flyers' fourth and third lines, and they might as well just put out nobody.
Yeah,
like, when they're playing the Penguins, when their third line has Kessel on it. So it was a weird series because 0 games in the 6 games felt like a playoff game.
Yeah,
like, it was a first game blowout. The second game was weird. The Flyers won 5-1, but
it didn't feel right. Yeah, it didn't feel right. Yeah.
And then game 3, it was just like another shellacking.
Yep, 5-1.
And then same thing with game 4. 5-0. And then the Flyers found a way to win a boring game. Game five, right?
Yep. We won 4-2 that game.
And then, game 6 was fun.
I think the crazy thing about game 6 is we lost 8-5, and that was probably our best game of the series.
Yeah. I mean, we gave up. That's what kept happening, where they knew they didn't really – they were being outplayed. They're outskilled. The Penguins are better, and they just kind of just stopped really believing that they could even compete, and the games just ended in this, like, late second period over and over again. Yeah.
Yeah, and then it just kind of dragged on.
There was no belief on the team. Like, I mean, they were – always going to be the underdog, obviously. And if they beat the Penguins, it would have been surprising. But like, you could tell that they knew they weren't going to win.
Yeah, and I think midway through the second, we had a 4-2 lead over them, and we scored first that game, and then we were down.
Couturier scored an amazing goal coming into the third period, right? Like,
Couturier did everything in that game.
He was definitely the best player throughout the entire season.
This year he's matured so much. But in that elimination game, we were up 4-2. You know, after we battled back, and again, you know, Couturier scored first, Crosby and Hagelin scored, and it's just like, great, here we go again. Because it just feels like, it felt like what, game 3, where we scored first, and then Pittsburgh just blew over us. And it really did feel like that. And then Andrew McDonald squeaks one in. And it's like, hey, wait a minute. We got this. Couturier scores. Holy shit. Lawton scores. All right, we're up 4-2. We got this. And then they tie it in the second. 54 seconds left in the second. Gensel scored to tie it. And then Gensel, the god, the playoff god.
He sucks.
No, he is Danny Briere. He can't do shit.
Nah,
he's an aging Danny Briere.
No, he's not.
He can't do
shit. No, he's not Danny Briere. No. Danny Briere was good by himself. Gensel needs Crosby. As soon as Gensel needs to be re-signed, the Pittsburgh Penguins won't re-sign him, and he'll go play for, like, you know, I don't know, the Minnesota Wild or something and suck. Just wait. It's going to happen.
Well, anyways, Gensel scores 4 in a row.
Sorry.
And only one of them were assisted by Crosby, just saying. Couturier finishes.
Yeah, he scored 4 in a row against Brian Elliott.
That was good for Averth.
Or, okay, Neuwirth. What glass man do you want to pick?
And Couturier scores, completes his hat tricks, makes it 7-5. Brian Rust scores a meaningless empty net goal to make it 8-5. But I think the worst part about that is it was, one, an elimination game and you give up 8 fucking goals. You can't do that. But it's just, like, they just gave up. You're like, we're winning. And then they came back and it's like, it's Pittsburgh. We got no chance. I mean, look at their team. We got no chance. I think... we were embarrassed this year. We were exposed mainly in the playoffs.
Well, one person was really exposed.
Yeah.
That was the coach.
Oh, yeah. Well, again, we will talk about that guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
In a little bit. We're going to have some heated things to talk about. I think a lot of...
That's what I'm waiting for. That's the build-up.
Yeah. We're just going to touch on some player stats real quick for the playoffs specifically. Couturier led all Flyers in goals, assists, and points. 5 goals, 4 assists, 9 points. He was the one of, I think, 2 Flyers that were positive and plus-minus. He was a +1 on the playoff series.
He's the most important player.
He is the most important player on the team.
More so than a Drew.
Drew... We're going to talk about him. He had 1 goal, 2 assists.
Who I love
Drew, Claude Drew. 3 points, but the biggest problem with Claude Drew, and of course this is being matched up against Crosby, is he was a minus 10. He was a minus 10.
Yeah.
I mean, we gave up a ton of goals.
Yeah, I'm throw that stat out the window for that. Like, they gave up 8 goals in game 1.
Yeah, but, I mean,
Voracek
was only a -3. Ghost was a -3. Provorov was a -6. Patrick was a -5. Simmons was even. That guy played with 4 million injuries.
How many games did Drew play with Fippola as his center?
2.
Okay, throw those out the window. Throw out game 1 and then tell me what the plus minus is.
Okay, I'm not doing all that research
now. Don't actually figure that out.
I didn't even count Mrazek's stats because he played, what, 1 game, and that was came in at game 1. Yeah. Elliot had a .475 goals against and an .856 save percentage, and then one win. And Waver had the other win, but he finished with a .44 goals against average and an .847 save percentage. But again, that's not necessarily their fault because they are glassmen. Elliot was obviously playing injured.
He probably
shouldn't have been playing at all. The Waverth probably shouldn't have been playing either. But how bad is it? How bad is your goalie depth when you have 2 guys who should not be playing because they're hurt, and you have Peter Mrazek sitting there, and you go, "Let's play the hurt guys. Let's play the hurt guys."
Well, that's how bad Mrazek.
Yeah,
was.
And but Lyon's
why
not ready.
Why not play Lyon?
I don't think they have any faith in Lyon, and I don't. And I think
he didn't play bad.
Yeah.
Really, like.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't I'm not going to say he did, like, outstanding, but I think at this point he probably would have gave them a better chance than,
I mean,
obviously hurt Brian Elliott and
was also hurt
Michael Neuwirth.
If Chicago could have an
was hurt
come
at the time,
make 7 stops.
Yeah.
You could have Lyon come in
and
do something.
But Lyon, I don't know what his numbers are, but, like, he came in for, like, a couple games, and I think he posted, like, the same exact numbers as Mrazek and Elliott that during that time for him.
I think he posted... It might have been like a .905 save percentage. I'm not exactly sure on that, but
it's better than 800.
But it's better than what you're getting.
I mean,
that's
kind of like, you know, what are we really arguing about? Sub below average goaltending. But,
right.
Like, which bad goalie do you want?
Exactly.
Which really bad goaltender gives us the best chance?
It seems weird to play the 2 guys who are hurt. Like, Elliot had core surgery. He said he couldn't tie his shoes
on his oblique. It's not even like Like, exactly. that is a core muscle that you need to play goalie. Like, you need to be able to move your midsection.
And you saw it.
Yeah.
Oh, it was exactly.
There was that one goal where it was a pass across the crease. It was from like it was on a power play from like dot to dot. But Elliot was nowhere near moving there in time. Like he couldn't. Yeah. He just couldn't move. And maybe Lyon could get there and make a lucky
possibly.
Save. I don't know.
Possibly. On the topic of the players, let's talk about them in the regular season. Because I think we've said all we want to say about the playoffs with the exception of two gentlemen.
And I think with the playoffs too, as far as that goes, I mean, it's across seven, you know, at most it's across seven games here. It was across six games, but, and it's against the best, right now, the best playoff team in hockey. So you can only go so far when we're in the middle of a rebuild. I mean, we got embarrassed, but
did we really expect
anything
a
different?
Guy like Couturier and be like, wow, that's really promising that he was able to do that. Especially when he was coming back from injury, and then you can throw pretty much everyone else's.
I think the most important part about his stats late in the postseason where he wasn't on Giroux's line. He didn't need Giroux to draw attention away from him. And this is Giroux coming off the best statistical season of his career, and he just turned 30, ladies and gentlemen. He's supposed to be in a decline. He put up 34 goals, 68 assists, 102 points. He's not going to put up 102 points next year. But I don't think
– I mean, if he did – I hope he does too.
But I don't think he's going to
– Yeah, you're right. He's not going to put up 102. He's going to put up 104.
We're going to quote that. We're going to hold you on record for that. If he doesn't score 104, you have to buy us all pizza.
He's going to be in pretty much the same shape, and he's probably going to be on the same line. So, yeah, you know, maybe he does put up 100
points. I'm going to say he's probably puts up like 70.
Like 80s, 90s.
I'd say he hits 70. I don't know if he's going to be a point-of-game player.
I mean, he'll definitely hit
70. He very well – I want him to. Don't get me wrong. I love Claude Giroux. I am a Claude Giroux supporter. I've been that way since
I don't see why not.
Up when he was – you know, I love Claude Giroux. If
Couturier is on his line again, and especially if you put Konecny there, which,
right,
you know, that may or may not happen. But if that happens, I think
another big thing
close
with Giroux is he was a +28, and he played all 82 games. So no decline from him. No decline. Voracek was second on the team with 85 points. He put 20 goals, 65 assists.
Ooh, okay, wait. I've been waiting for you to mention Voracek.
Yeah.
I think Voracek has played for six seasons on the Flyers. How many of those six seasons do you think he was around a point per game?
Probably about four of them.
Yeah, I think it was three. Ooh. I think I looked it up yesterday. It was three. So,
well, it was
he's really good. He gets so much crap. Everyone wants to like get rid of him, but he's probably our best
winger. I think the problem. Again, it's a Philadelphia mentality. We want goal scorers. We want home run hitters. We want, you know, we want guys. But Voracek's not.
What difference does it make, though? If a guy has 80 assists,
production is production.
That means there was 80 goals scored.
Right. Production is
like,
production.
Because he's not scoring them.
Regardless if he's the one putting in the back. I'd like him to shoot a little bit more. But is it ever going to happen? Probably not. He played all 82 games as well. And so did Couturier. Couturier did, and of course, he's coming off the best statistical career. A Selke finalist, hopefully a Selke winner.
So the start of the season, top line of Giroux, Voracek, and Couturier played the entire season.
Yeah, all 82 games.
That's really good. That's very
it is, and it's fantastic. He had career highs and everything, obviously. 31 goals, 45 assists, 76 total points. It was a +34. Nothing less that you would expect from a guy who's been voted on for as a Selke finalist, and we're going to talk about awards in a second because we did forget to mention one big thing about Giroux, and it's his heart stub. But I don't want to take anything away from Couturier because Couturier certainly benefited from playing with Giroux,
or Giroux benefited from playing with Couturier.
I think it's both. I think what it is because Hakstol actually did one good thing and he put Giroux to the wing, and then what that did is it allowed Giroux to free himself up. To not have to worry about taking faceoffs. To not have to worry.
Well, he did take faceoffs Giroux took most of the faceoffs.
Well, they took it. They took it on their dominant side, because they're opposite hands. They took it on their dominant side.
Yeah.
So
I just want to say one thing about that, though. I mean, it obviously worked, and I'm glad. Like it probably did help Giroux. I really did want to see him play center at the beginning of the year just to see if he could do it. Because I honestly believe that Giroux's last 2 or 3 years were really due to injury and not due to age decline. Like, he was just
due to injury.
Coming off a bunch of different nagging, a bunch of different injuries. Like, he had a wrist injury coming into one season. He had the hip surgery.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to see him come in this year. Like, I expected him to have a bounce back year this year. And, I mean, I wasn't expecting 100 points. And I think if he was center, he probably gets 80 points.
Tony absolutely
points.
Did.
But now you have an 80-point center, and you have Sean Couturier, and you have Nolan Patrick.
Right. So. And I think the big thing is we've seen Couturier now. But at the beginning of the season, you know, throughout his career, he's been streaky. And, you know, he's been snake-bitten every year except for this year until he reached – oh, he was at 99 goals for his career and took him, like,
I'm pretty sure he was the Flyers' best even strength scorer, though.
I mean, as a plus 34, I would say so.
No, like before this year.
Yeah, I think that was the thing that we lacked most was even strength scoring. And our power play did take a bit of a decline this year.
Well, I think with Couturier, though, yeah. I mean, you've always seen it. He's always driven play at a really high level, even when his line mates were players like Dale Weiss and Matt Reed. He
dead.
Still drove play
because he is
in,
dead.
In the right direction.
Which you're right. Everybody that we don't like will end up.
He's
going to
end up on Minnesota.
I love Matt Reed. Matt Reed. I have Matt Reed. I love Matt Reed.
He was
when it was
paid,
Reed, Shannon Couturier. Pretty... They were all young together. And Reed was a 26-year-old rookie, and Couturier was a 19-year-old rookie. on the same year, in the same year, I might add.
Because
I don't look that stuff up.
Kind of grab Couturier.
So while you do that, we're going to talk about the biggest snub.
Yeah, you go. You go for more.
That's
plus
the fact that Drew is not even nominated for the Hart Trophy. This is a guy. He had 102 points, second in the league in scoring to only the one of a kind.
That's amazing.
The only reason why Connor McDavid wasn't nominated because his team was absolute hot garbage. So who was it? It was Kopitar, Hall. And who's the third guy that was nominated? McKinnon, yeah. Also, all three teams that got beat in the first round of the playoffs. Teams that certainly are the most valuable player on their team. But I don't think the Flyers come close to the playoffs without the season that Drew has. And
I think I read somewhere
he has,
like,
and now here's one
reading Drew, they were like
that I did
hear.
He has the most wins over replacement of anybody of all four of those players between Drew, McKinnon, Hall, and Kopitar. And I think what's crazy is forget about Connor McDavid being on a team that didn't make the playoffs. The guy has 108 points. Drew has 102 points. Kucherov has 100 points even. Malkin has 98. And you put three guys underneath it, 97, 93, and 92, respectively, for McKinnon, Hall, and Kopitar. I think that's a bit ridiculous that Claude Giroux doesn't beat out Kopitar.
He eats it.
Oh, absolutely, because Kopitar, I mean, what was his...
I mean, he's the best player on the Kings roster.
Linking to get to being nominated.
Maybe other than John
I don't even remember what...
It's fantastic.
Obviously, but like,
I have opinions about
okay.
this. Kopitar is on there because he's on the Kings. And every couple of years, we have to give the Kings a trophy just because they're out west, and we feel bad for them.
Well, what about the Ducks?
Everyone hates the Ducks.
What about the
everyone
Sharks?
Hates the Ducks. They like the Kings. The Kings are
the
glamour franchise of the
West. It's because it's LA. They've won a couple cups.
The Sharks,
yes, they're a glamour franchise. We just forget about them. I actually like McKinnon being in there.
I like McKinnon being in there as well.
I'll tell you why Giroux's not there. It's because he was moved to wing, which is seen as an easier position. So that hurt him in the vote. I disagree with that, but yeah, that's why.
Well, I think when the votes come out, we're going to see who Philadelphia is going to tear apart, and it's going to be interesting. While Kush still looks up those Couturier. Oh, you have him. Give us to us. Give us the Couturier stats that I don't care about.
I know. I have him right here. So over the past three seasons, and this is including 2015-16, 2016-17, where he was on the third line, he's posted positive, right, even strength.
Now, of course, anybody with a brain,
so he's always been driving,
can actually analyze hockey,
right,
doesn't need statistics to see that. So I could have told you that, but I can't give you seriously, I can't give you a number on it. And I think.
Oh yeah,
this is we're gonna talk about this. Not today. Another day with Sabermetric Corsi percentages and stuff like that. I think they have some value, but not as much as some people hold. We have to get through the player stuff, though, because we have to get to the important stuff.
My thing with that is, though, I'm just going to say about quick plus minus, because there's some people that think, I guess in this case, you kind of like plus minus better, but I kind of like, you know, the play driving stats, because you're not always going to have goals for or goals against in each play, but you always get stuff like shots, quality
so
shots.
So a couple years ago, we're going to touch on this real quick, because
that
is a big thing for me. It's a big stat for me. Alexander Ovechkin had 50 goals, and he led the league in minus. And now, I understand you want that offensive pressure, but how can you have such a big defensive liability and be okay with that? Like, now, since then,
this is
in his
exactly the problem with plus minus, because you see 50 goals, but you see a negative. Like, he's a minus player, even though he scored 50 goals. Therefore, he's hurting his team. But it's kind of ignoring, like, why is he a minus? Is it because of him? Or if you replace Ovechkin with any other player, are they going to be minus 100 instead of minus 35? So
I think the big thing with Ovechkin, and of course he's fixed his plus minus issues since then, to his credit, he scores a lot of power play goals, and I think I'm saying he needed to get better at 5-on-5, and he did. Regardless, again, that's another podcast for another day.
And that's something you can definitely pull up with advanced statistics too, seeing how he's improved. They kind of go hand in hand, where
Corsi is
kind of measuring shots
minus, but it's just
plus minus.
Okay, again, we'll get to that another day. Let's move on. Let's keep talking
about exactly
right. Ghost had a good year, 65 points, 13 goals, which was down, but I don't really care about that because he's got 52 assists, and that's fantastic. It's like, I don't need a goal score. I don't need a 20 goal score from the blue line. If you're getting shots on net, creating opportunities for the players around him to score, I think he's doing fantastic. Again, a plus 10. Played 78 games, which is still really good. Konechny, Mr. Travis Konechny, good old Teeks. Before getting on the top line, he was 4-6-10. 4 goals, 6 assists, 10 points. And he joined the top line in February. Or in January, sorry, January. He finished with 24 goals, 23 assists, and 47 points. So he had 20 goals since joining the top line, 17 assists. I think he was finally given the opportunity he should have got last year that he didn't get because Hextall's a terrible coach. And yet...
There it is.
And yet he still gets benched in a third period in which he had 2 goals because he had 1 bad defensive possession. And he gets benched for 16 minutes, I think it was, in one game. And I think that's just ridiculous. And I think, again, we're going to talk about this asshole later. As you can see, the hatred's just building up. We're doing a really good job of building this. I think it's just embarrassing that a player who obviously has the skill, obviously has the drive, obviously has the fight, and I'm sure Corsi will back that up with actual facts and figures and numbers, gets punished for something that, if it only happens once a game, I mean, of course, there's timing and everything with that, but with a young player, if it's only happening once or twice a game, I don't think you should bench him for 16 minutes. I think it's just ridiculous. Right.
Absolutely. You're benching better players.
And then quickly,
or worse
just to run
players,
down,
and that's what's
3 more
essentially
players.
Losing
Simmons,
games.
Finished with 46 points, 24 goals, 22 assists, minus 16, but he was hurt all year, so that's fine. He had literally 6 million injuries. The guy is a warrior. Guy is easily a 30 plus goal scorer a year.
Yeah.
While basically doing, yeah.
In my head, he put
Provorov.
Yeah, over 20 goals.
Yeah, he was still winning. Provorov is our best defenseman. I don't care what anybody says. He is our best defenseman.
Does anyone say he is?
Yes. Somebody does. Oh, absolutely. Dave Haxtell says that. Provorov,
and even Dave Haxtell can see that.
He is. He
Brandon Manning.
Well, actually, he...
Brandon Manning.
He actually can.
That's
Provorov had 17 goals, which is fantastic from the blue line. 24 assists, 40 points. He was a plus 17, played in all 82 games. And then Patrick, the rookie, 13 goals, 17 assists, 30 points. He was a plus one. He only played in 73 games, which I know is still a lot, but I felt like he played more than he did. Early in the year,
actually,
like November,
right? Because he was hurt like a month early on. He was like getting over the groin injury. I think if you like look at his second half stats,
to talk specifically on some defenseman Ghost,
you can see
again,
the improvement.
He's getting better defensively, and I think that was his biggest weakness early in his career. And I think he's growing into going to be, you know, he's going to be a top pairing defenseman with Provorov. Provorov. Speaking of which, is going to be a Norris Trophy candidate if the voters don't fuck him over too. Sanheim, he kind of got the raw deal. Same with him and Robert Hägg. They got benched for this thing called a quote unquote veteran presence.
I feel like we should talk about all these players at the same time we talk about the coach because they all kind of go hand in hand with our feelings on the coach.
Yeah,
right?
Gudas killed Couturier in the playoffs. Literally killed him. Brandon Manning, please leave. I know, but that's just what my notes say. please leave faster. How about that? And Andy Mac McDonald, he could have played better, but he could have also played a lot worse. Which
actually, he didn't bother me too much this year, but I think that was mainly because Manning.
Yes. Goaltending.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think this. Well, I was going to say something about McDonald. I think the reason why he's bothering fans less is because I think he's playing more. To his role, he was a second pair defenseman.
He's not.
All year.
He wasn't playing with.
He's not being less pushed as a number one pairing defenseman. He's being put into his role. Right.
Yeah. He's not good. Yeah, he's not going up against the.
Exactly.
The, you know,
and real quick, touch goaltending. Even though we've kind of done this, Elliott and Wavers both injured all the time. I think Elliott, before his injuries, when he played healthy, played as expected, above average goalie to an average goalie.
I would disagree.
I think before the injuries...
I think I'm the only person that seems to think that Elliott played bad all year. I mean, like, he had a below average...
I don't know. Well,
all year.
Essentially.
We just
replaced
Steve
Mason,
Steve Mason from, like, the
it,
previous year.
Elliott is being praised, which bothers me. Like, Steve Mason and Elliott basically had the same year, but last year all we heard about was how bad Steve Mason was, and this year all we heard about was, wow, Elliott's a warrior, but he wasn't. He sucked.
Yeah.
That's my hot take.
Your hot take has cooled me down, and it makes
sense. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Actually, I guess it warmed me up. pretty good. The Wavereth is just dead weight because he's a glass man. Mrazek,
see what his save percentage was. Well, I think with Neuwirth, though, like, I think he's again, follows the Flyers' line of inconsistency, but I think if he had a full
it's never
going to
happen.
He might be an
above
average.
Mrazek was the right trade at the right time, but
it didn't work out.
And it was a fifth-round pick. It was a gamble that needed to be done. Lion.
I think it's a third-round pick.
Yeah,
you're right, Brian Elliott.
Lion, his name should be changed to Leon, by the way. I hate the fact that it's pronounced Lion.
That's like...
No, it's perfect because when he backs up Hart, our goaltending tandem is Heart of a Lion.
Or Lionheart, yeah. But Leon sounds just so much cooler.
No, it does. Lion sounds bad.
It does. Also, Anthony Stolarz, he's back playing professional hockey. So good for him.
Bounce back.
I think he's got one more year.
Is his contract up this
friendly
year?
I didn't choose the Flyers. Oh shit, Phil Void.
What's up?
Okay, probably shouldn't screen.
So I thought he had. I think he's on RFA.
Stolars. He's
was it restricted
at the end of the season. He's an RFA though. Yeah, so they can tender him. Same with Lyon, actually. He's an RFA. Sam Morin. Again, we'll talk about that next podcast. We're going to talk about the upcoming offseason and stuff like that. We talked about Hart, Sandstrom. Who knows? We don't know what's going to happen with him because we don't know what's going to happen with Carter Hart. So we talked about the regular season, the playoffs. Now let's talk about how it affects us as a fan base because, Devin, as you mentioned, as we were kind of talking about doing this whole thing, the state of the fan base is in an interesting position. So do you want to touch on that?
Yeah, no one cares.
Yeah.
It's just everyone is just bored. They're over it. And it's funny because the Flyers probably have the brightest future in a really long time. It's never looked this good when you look at their prospects and their farm system.
Right.
But it's
right.
just – I don't know. It's weird. It's just, the last 6 years have been mediocre team, maybe make the playoffs, but probably not get past the first round. And even the last 3 years, we know at least we had a vision and a plan, but it still just feels just bleh,
yeah.
Like,
well, it's because we've literally had the same identity of like you said, we're making the playoffs or just missing the playoffs or a middling team.
Yeah, and
we're not tanking. We're not winning. We're just.
I think the biggest part of that
is a bubble team.
We're fed up with mediocrity. We are fed up with just settling for okay instead of.
But it's funny because if the Flyers make one or two good moves this offseason, that could end.
Oh, absolutely.
But it doesn't feel
right. It feels like Hextall has this plan, and he drew it up 6 years ago or whatever. It's not 6 years. Well, he might have drew it up.
And here's the other thing. Well, you have you also have your prospects coming up. Like on defense, you're shedding Brandon Manning, and your Travis Sanheim's going to move in. Now he's permanently Robert.
Right.
Now you have these.
We have.
What's
going to happen is
refuse to play Sanheim, the floor. Now he really doesn't have
a lot next year because he's a year older, and it's not because he's better, just because he's older.
Right.
He'll play.
Then it's like a moot point because now he's just being played. So.
Yes, no, we have to get there now. We've mentioned this. He is the guy
and actually,
who is going to get all of the blame. And whatever bounces off of him goes to our next guy, and that's Hextall. But he's just – so I'm going to let you all talk about him because we all have – basically the same opinion, but I also have a separate thing that I want to talk about, but I want you guys to get your opinions out there first. So Dave Hextall, how terrible does he go?
All right, go, Kush. You go first.
All right, so he had a couple common sense moves. I guess the Giroux wing move was, I'm not going to say insightful, but, he had a couple good moves to start the year, and then I mean, you see it all the time. His player usage was terrible. Jori Lehtere out with 2 minutes left. Jori Lehtere getting over 12, 13 minutes a night.
Just in general.
playing Brandon Manning on defense. I mean, it was really bad all season. And you see, those late games that are blown because of those direct decisions. We've seen it in the playoffs. His refusal to make in-game adjustments is terrible. He'll just keep trying the same thing. And if he does make an adjustment, it's not one that's going to have an impact, it'll be he'll take,
he'll take his
top line and call that an adjustment, mid-game.
Shit the bet.
Exactly. He'll punish those guys mid-game. It'll be pretty obvious, he'll bench Konechny for an entire period, but You have your bad players continue to play late in games, third period situations. And I think, too, and it's weird because you look at the relationship between Hextall and Hextall, and Hextall continues to play these players that aren't great, and Hextall continues to just let them go. So you see, Hextall doesn't really see the value in these players that Hextall sees in these players.
All right.
That to me is very interesting.
A positive point for Hextall. He hasn't really had a roster that's been deep yet, so like it is very possible that once he gets a deep roster, he won't be such a terrible coach. But that being said, he's done nothing to make a bad roster better in any way, shape, or form. And I don't know, like every move he makes just frustrates me. Like I get like the Fippola on top line because right, Couturier was hurt. He had a torn MCL, he couldn't play on the top line. I get it. But, like, to me, the obvious move was just you had a 100-point guy who played center for his whole career. Just make Giroux the center. And then have Nolan Patrick be your second-line center. And then Fippola be your fourth-line center. Like, that was the obvious move.
Yeah.
He has a bias towards older veterans.
Veteran presence. That's what I'm saying.
Which means he's not evaluating players based on their performance because if you evaluate any metric you use, whether you're an eye test guy, a stat guy, a little bit of both, would tell you that Travis Konecny is better than Raffle and should be on the top line, mm-hmm. and that it you're hurting your team more by having Konecny be on a bad line as opposed to having him be on. Like, if Konecny's on the top line, they probably score more goals than Raffle on the third line. Like, I get what, like, the idea was Konecny might make the third line better than Raffle would. But that's Konecny isn't a guy that carries a line yet, so he should be with Couturier and Drew. You know, scratching Sanheim for Hag. It's like okay, Hag is the safe checking guy. He checks people. He's not the guy with upside. Sanheim is playing Manning over Sanheim, just like over and over and over again. It's like just take a risk, take a chance, and play a young guy over a guy that sucks. Like, we know what Manning's going to do. We know what Andrew McDonald's going to do. We know what Jory Lehterry's going to do. They're going to be okay at best. A rookie might be great, or he might make a stupid mistake, but then he might be great again. Like, they have higher upside. You're a bubble team. It's not like you're expected to win the cup. Take a chance. Let these guys play. But over and over and over again, I have to sit there and watch Jory Lehterry and Fippola and Weiss on a line do absolutely nothing and blow a lead against Calgary or something.
Yeah.
Like it's just I'm over it. It's it instills no faith in me for the future.
No, I agree with you. I think he does rely too much on a veteran presence, but I'm gonna play devil's advocate here. And I want you guys to hear me out before you say anything.
And I won't.
Okay. I understand. I understand. But I was thinking about this the other day. And I think maybe we've been just a little bit too critical of him. I think we're judging him against NHL coaches, other NHL coaches who have been in the league for many years. It's only his third year. He's made the playoffs 2 out of 3 years with subpar rosters, as you say, with too much emphasis on veteran presence. He's finished with 96, 88, and 98 points respectively. He's got a career win record. It's 122, 86, and 38. He's only had 3 years of NHL experience, right? He served 11 years in North Dakota. He made the final. He made the Frozen Four 6 times. He was in the tournament every single year, and he was a runner-up their first year there. He's proven he can run a competitive team. He can run it well. Of course, it is the college game. It's not the NHL game. So basically, what I'm saying is. He's never won a championship. The best he's been is second ever. Hang on. Hear me out. Now, this is North Dakota. This isn't Boston College or Minnesota Duluth or the other Boston bullshit team. This is North Dakota State. What I'm saying is maybe he just needs the 6 years of his contract to grow into an NHL coach. Granted, I think he is doing a piss-poor job right now. But over the initial passional of hate that I had for him, I thought about it. Maybe he just needs experience to refine his system, refine, you know, everything to the faster paced game, to the young man's game, and not just worry about the guys who've been around for 4+ years because that's what you did in college. I think a lot of it comes down to he needs a mentor. He needs somebody like Hextall to kind of say, hey, listen, this isn't college, bro. Fix this shit. So what do you think about that? little hot take.
All right, 2 points. 2 points about that take. All right, first, what was his overall record again?
122, 86, and 38.
So, what is 86 plus 38?
I don't know. I don't do mental math.
Yeah, like, it's like I count those 38s as losses. Like, to me, I don't care about overtime losses. It's just losses.
Okay.
So he's basically 500. And he made the playoffs 2 out of 3 years, but he got destroyed in the playoffs. Like, both of those playoff series were ugly. Like, the Flyers were embarrassed. It took Michael Neuwirth having two amazing games against the Capitals to make that into a series with a team that had mental playoff issues. So I'm not really impressed. I forget what my second point was. Oh, I remember it. I'm sorry. I remember it.
I'm kind of feeling it. I mean, like,
he only has three years as coach and he could learn, but, like, he should be on the Phantoms then. Like, he shouldn't be learning to be an NHL coach on the NHL team.
Yeah, exactly. Because he's wasting, like, while he's developing and learning, fine, but, like, what about the players that, like, that should be developing now that he's robbing of that time? Like, Travis Sanheim.
And
stayed
what
most of the year,
doing?
You know,
like, look at
Toronto, Gudis, or up in the press
giving
box.
Young guys a chance to lead the team.
Yeah, but Babcock's done it for years. That's what I'm saying. It's
exactly.
Not,
that's, but that's,
it, I'm saying.
I'm absolutely going to compare him to other NHL coaches because he's an NHL
coach.
I think
a lot of it, though, not just. I don't think we should put all the blame on Hextall. I think we should also put partial blame on the rest of the coaching staff, because Laperriere is only on the coaching staff because of what he did against
the
Devils.
Because
he took a puck to the face.
That's basically Ed Snyder owed him one.
Everyone always forgets he took the puck to the face again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. He took it twice in the same season or postseason.
Yeah, same playoff. Yeah.
And I mean, now the guy has no teeth, so that. Flyers felt bad, gave him coaching position. I think Hextall just needs some time. I didn't like the fact that I thought this way, because I really do hate Hextall. I think he's not. I feel so much of what you guys are saying. I really do. I mean,
I get what you're saying. Like, maybe, you know, once he has a better roster, maybe he gets
I think a big part of it
maybe
is
he won't be terrible
for making mistakes because he doesn't have that guy to put on the first line. Because
I think a big part of the reason now why I'm thinking this way is probably a little bit of reassurance to myself in the Flyers, because hopefully they will. I think a big part of it is, though, Hextall has already come out and said he's not doing anything with the coaching staff, which I think. Fine, don't do anything with the head coach. Get rid of the rest of the fucks, though, because they don't know what the fuck they're doing. Our penalty kill is prime number one example of that. I think Hextall has a plan.
Yeah, his plan is to replace him with his power play coach.
I think what he needs to do... Does Daryl Sutter have a job right now?
No, I don't want
him. I want Daryl Sutter. Daryl Sutter's a great hockey guy.
Yeah, he talks funny.
Oh, he talks.
I don't want a hockey guy. I'm tired of hockey guys.
Yeah, he's a
hockey
guy.
You know what hockey guys do, Drew? They play Brandon Manning on their top line.
Brandon Manning is going to play for the Wild next year. And oh, my God.
Yeah, and the hockey guys will make him a second pair defenseman. I actually thought
he's
going to
play in the West,
and
I think it's either
going to
be Minnesota or Dallas.
I just recently thought about this, too. Somewhere where
Dallas has a knack of going, hey, that guy's a veteran.
Oh, no. Who? You know who would absolutely
oh,
hate?
My God. No, yeah, that's
Brandon Manning, and I think it'd be hilarious.
To protect
the Edmonton
son.
Oilers.
To protect his bitch.
Absolutely. Because Peter Chiarelli has that hockey guy mentality where he has to, quote-unquote, build a culture around hockey.
You don't hear that. You don't hear that.
Oh, my God.
Basketball guy or football guy. It's like. Hockey's weird, man. Cracks me up.
Yeah. But yeah, he said it a couple of years ago. I was watching some like Insider Access when he was in Boston about how they were talking about when he was trading Sagan, and his quote on Sagan was like,
"Yeah, that just came out like a superstar player ago, too." That he said that.
But does he fit our culture?
I thought that was just ridiculous. He traded so many good guys away from Boston.
That video,
and they still won cups.
Sagan it's old, but it circulates around every year because it's hilarious.
But see, that's the kind. Yeah. And that kind of culture is where you see guys like Brandon Manning.
So with Brandon Manning,
you know,
and now obviously
in an NHL roster, Hextall's
come out and said he's gone, Reed's gone, and I don't fucking care, he's gone.
You know what I want to see? I want to see someone ask Hextall how he feels about that because he clearly rode those players because he trusted them, and then his GM is just like these guys.
The thing,
except for Jory Letang.
Well, it's literally out. Well, he's still got a year of contract left.
He should be caught out.
He's not going to be. They're actually trying to get Filppula back, aren't they? No, Filppula's gone.
Nah,
Filppula's gone, right?
Filppula's gone. He just said, like,
it was Laterra. He said he was trying to.
He said he'd like to bring Filppula back, but I think he's just saying that.
If they bring Filppula back, I think what he's saying is, if we can't get anybody, we're going to bring Filppula back.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, Filppula's 34. He made $5 million this year to play in obscurity.
Yeah, come back. We'll pay you league minimum.
I think a big part of it is if Hextall really has this grand plan, and he's been saying with the past 2 years it's a transitional year, it's a transitional year, it's a transitional year. How many transitional years before you just say, fuck it, we have to get rid of these guys? And I think that's a big deal with why Hextall still has a job, why the coaching staff still has a job, because Hextall has this plan and he sees it as it's a transitional year, and this is part of his plan, and I just don't see how it's going to work. Because, I mean, he's not going to tell us the plan, but, like, give us something. God damn, Ron. Please.
I think this...
Give us part three.
Give us a part
of
the
plan. Just give
so
us,
we
like,
know
something.
You have a
plan. I think we're going to have to wrap this up. But I mean, I think we planned on doing a podcast like on the off season.
Oh, yeah.
I think that'd be like a good tease for that.
And I think
this off season is probably the most important off season of Hextall.
It is. It 100% is the most important off season of Hextall's career. I think. Next time we're going to talk about the podcast. We're going to talk about the podcast too. Next time we're going to talk just the podcast, just us, how we're idiots. Clearly, we're going to talk about the off season. We're not 100% sure we're going to start it. Start the next one, but we're going to talk about the draft, whether it happened yet or not. We'll talk about Hextall some more. We're going to elaborate on him because, like I said, like we've mentioned, he's got a plan. We don't know what the hell it is. So let's try and figure it out. He's got some big moves or lack thereof moves to make.
Yeah, it's going to be a matter of whether or not when he's going to take that
and
next step and how he takes it. Is it going to be this
year? We know
year?
He can make cap dumps.
Right. But can he bring in assets?
Can he raise to improve?
Yeah.
Bring things in.
I think maybe next podcast we'll do an armchair GM. That's something that we'll do from time to time here as an armchair GM. That's where these two idiots will give me a task, and I'll try to do it better than Hextall, or have Hextall do something that he should do, just to see if something is plausible and things like that. Yeah, sounds good. All right. So
Sixers
did lose, which is very sad.
Yeah,
that's very sad. And Nashville at this time is up 2-0.
I saw that.
But we would like to thank everybody who tuned in to listen to this. All three of us, and maybe two other people. We greatly appreciate it.
All two of you.
I would hope so. Come on, man.
What, you think I'm going to listen to it?
It's 93 minutes long.
It's not 93 minutes long. It's take 15 minutes off that. Right. I think we got something good going here. Share us, like, or I don't know if we can like this stuff. I don't know. We're new to this stuff.
I don't know. Maybe hold off on the sharing until we get
good. Now share. Get us out there. Let us know. Follow us on Twitter. We are at wit_hockey on Twitter. You can follow myself at TheBigDrew92. You can follow Devin at DevinS93. And you can follow Kush at FlyWalker1975 because, of course, he's got to get that Flyers pun in there. Again, we thank you all very much. We've been Devin.
Obviously.
What? Say goodbye.
Oh, goodbye.
First podcast. We've been Kush.
That's going to happen forever.
And I've been Drew. I've been. Hello. We've been Wizwit Hockey. I have been Drew. I've been. I did it, guys. I've been me.
You've been Drew.
We're done. Got we're it. Done. One of wait. This is terrible sign. What? He left. He 100% left. All right. We've been Wizwit Hockey. You guys have a wonderful day.
That's amazing.
God bless. I don't know. We're going. Right, we're already going down the trash.